Imagine having like a crystal ball to understand how a major infrastructure player really works, what actually drives its value. That's pretty much our mission today. We're doing a deep dive into Grupo Aeroportuario del Pacífico, or PAC. They're a leading private airport operator in Latin America. Our sources for this are, well, mainly a detailed investment research analysis, but also their public financials, investor reports, that sort of thing. These docs lay out PAC's business model, where they sit in the market, their financials, and, you know, their future plans. So the goal here is to pull out the key insights, really get what makes PAC unique, and flag the opportunities and, of course, the risks. Basically help you get properly informed on this really fascinating company. Okay, let's get into it. PAC isn't just like one airport, right? It's this huge network. What's the actual scope here and what makes their mix of airports stand out?
Well, what's really interesting, I think, is just how diversified that portfolio is. We're talking 14 airports. 12 of them are spread across Mexico, strategically placed, and then they have two in Jamaica. And this mix, this specific blend, lets them capture a really wide range of traffic, everything from business travelers to, you know, tourists, but also that really important VFR traffic visiting friends and relatives. And when you look closer at that portfolio, you see some real cornerstones. Take Guadalajara GDL. That's a major hub.
Yeah.
They're pushing it as the Mexican Silicon Valley. It serves, what, over 16 million people within about a three-hour drive. And it's really benefiting from this whole nearshoring thing everyone's talking about.
Oh, the nearshoring, right.
Exactly. Then you've got Tijuana, TIJ. That one's unique because of the cross-border express, the CBX. It's this pedestrian bridge. Basically makes it a binational airport, so people using it, they count as international passengers. Pretty clever.
That is clever.
And then, of course, the big tourist magnets. Los Cabos, SJD, and Puerto Vallarta, PVR. Absolutely key for that high-value international tourism, mostly coming from the U.S. and Canada. But it's not just the big names. They also have airports in these growing kind of mid-sized cities like Guanajuato, BJX, and Morelia, MLM. These are positioned well for, you know, domestic economic growth, industrial expansion. And finally, those two airports in Jamaica, Montego Bay, MBJ, and Kingston, KN, that gives them important international diversification, exposure to the Caribbean tourism market, which is pretty resilient. And it hedges them a bit against swings just in the Mexican market.
Okay, so with this incredibly diverse set of airports, you've got tourist spots, industrial centers, this cross-border thing. How does that translate into, well, making money? What's the actual business model look like?
All right, so their revenue basically rests on two main pillars. Understanding how these work together is pretty crucial. First, you've got the aeronautical revenues. These are the traditional fees, the regulated stuff. Mostly the passenger usage fee, TUA, they call it, plus landing fees, parking fees for the planes. That part grew a solid 20.9% year over year in the first quarter of 2025, reaching about $6.0 billion.
Okay, standard airport stuff. But you said two pillars. What's the second one? Because this is where you said it gets really interesting.
Exactly. The second pillar, non-aeronautical revenues. And this is where PEX's strategy is really showing. This is all the unregulated commercial stuff. Think retail shops, food and beverage, car rentals, parking for passengers, those VIP lounges. The segment didn't just grow, it surged. An impressive 41.3% jump, hitting $2.39 billion in Q1 25. And that meant it contributed, 29% of their total revenues if you exclude construction? That's a big shift from before. It's a really powerful strategic move.
Wow, over 40% growth there. That's huge.
It really is. And this huge growth in non-aero revenue isn't just, you know, selling more duty-free. It fundamentally changes their risk profile. By growing these streams, which have higher margins and aren't regulated like the aero fees, they're kind of insulating themselves from those government price caps.
Ah, okay. So less reliance on the regulated side.
It's precisely. It makes them less like a pure utility and more like a, well, a retail and real estate company operating within this controlled airport environment. It's a very smart strategic shift. And frankly, not many infrastructure players pull it off this well. And just for context, remember, they run these Mexican airports under these long-term 50-year concessions from the government. They expire in 2048. So that gives them stability, a sort of quasi-monopoly. But the flip side is they have to make big capital investments under these master development programs, the MDPs. It's part of the deal. Oh, and they've been public since 2006, listed on the NYSE, ticker PAC, and also on the Mexican exchange.
Okay, stepping back from just PAC for a moment, what's going on in the wider Mexican aviation scene? What makes this whole area interesting right now?
Well, the Mexican aviation industry generally has some pretty strong tailwinds. IATA, the International Air Transport Association, they're forecasting strong growth for Latin America, about 5.8% RPK growth in 2025. In Mexico's own agency, AFA, they see maybe 3% to 5% annual passenger growth for Mexico itself. A lot of that's driven by, you know, the rising middle class, better flight connections, and those low-cost carriers really expanding.
And tourism's still strong too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Mexico had a record year in 2024, something like 45 million international visitors. And through October 2024, international arrivals were up 7.2% year over year. And the U.S. and Canada are the big source markets there, which, you know, directly benefits PAX airports like Los Cabos and Puerto Vallarta. There's also quite a bit of government support, actually. The government has this big plan, $134 billion, for airport upgrades between 2025 and 2030, and they expect a huge chunk of that, over $100 billion, to come from private groups like PAC.
So a public-private partnership kind of deal?
Exactly. It's a clear path for growth, definitely. But it probably also means more government oversight, more scrutiny on how these companies operate. Now, looking at the competition in Mexico, the privatized airport sector, it's basically an oligopoly. Just three main players. You've got PAQI, of course. Then there's Grupo Aeroportuario del Sureste, ASUR, and Grupo Aeroportuario del Centro Norte, OMA.
Right. ASUR is Cancun, isn't it?
Yeah, ASUR's big anchor is Cancun, so they're really leveraged towards international tourism, leisure travel. They also have airports in Puerto Rico and Colombia. OMA, their main asset is Monterrey, so they're tilted more towards domestic travel, business, industrial stuff. About 87% of their passengers are domestic.
So how does PAQAS fit in compared to those two?
Well, this is where PEC's strategy really stands out. Their position is much more balanced, much more diversified. They've got the major business hubs like Guadalajara, the top-tier tourist spots like Los Cabos, and these developing regional airports. This structure, this mix, lets PEC benefit from several different economic drivers that aren't necessarily correlated. Think about it. U.S. consumer spending on vacations, that near-shoring trend-driving business travel, yeah, and the steady VFR traffic, they capture bits of all of that.
Well, it makes sense.
And you really saw this diversification play out in the Q1 2025 results. PEC kind of outperformed its peers. Their revenue growth was strong, 30.1% year over year. Compare that to ASUR at 18.2% and OMA at 15.6%.
Big difference.
Yeah. And net income, too. PEC grew 26.6%, while ASUR was 14.2% and OMA 19.3%. Even passenger growth overall, PEC saw 4.2%. ASUR was basically flat at 0.2%, though OMA did well at 9.1%. But still, PEC's balanced portfolio seems to be delivering more consistent broad-based growth.
Okay, that all sounds pretty impressive. But, you know, playing devil's advocate, this diversification, strong growth. How does that actually look on the bottom line? How's their financial health holding up?
Yeah.
Have they turned these advantages into solid financial results?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? And, well, the track record is pretty strong. Looking back from 2015 to 2019, before the pandemic, obviously, their revenues grew at about a 19% compound annual rate, which is impressive. Then post-pandemic, they bounced back really sharply. Revenues up 45% in 2022, another 38% in 2023, hitting about $1.85 billion in 2024. And Q1 2025 kept that going, up 30.1% year over year. So the top line growth is definitely there.
And profitability. Infrastructure can be capital intensive.
Exceptionally profitable, actually. Their margins are really high for this kind of business. Over the last 12 months, their EBITDA margin was almost 65%, 64.8%, operating margin over 53%, net profit margin around 25.6%, and return on equity, ROE, a really impressive 37.7%. These numbers aren't just good. They point to a really efficient operation. They're squeezing a lot of value out of their assets.
Okay, but here's something that caught my eye, and maybe it's a little wrinkle. You mentioned the strong Q1 revenue growth. But didn't the EBITDA margin actually dip slightly from almost 70% down to, what, 67%? Even with revenues way up, what's going on there? Is that a worry?
Ah, good catch. Yes, that's right. The EBITDA margin did see a slight contraction in Q1 25. And that does suggest, you know, rising operating costs, maybe higher concession fees kicking in as well. It's definitely something to keep an eye on. It's not a huge red flag yet. But with this massive investment program they're undertaking, cost control becomes even more critical. You don't want those margins eroding significantly.
Right. Makes sense. And the underlying driver for all this is still passenger numbers, presumably.
Absolutely. Passenger traffic is the core engine. After the pandemic hit, they recovered really well. Total passengers went from about 49 million in 2019 up to 62 million in 2024. And in Q1 2025, total traffic across all their airports was up 4.2% year over year, about 16.3 million passengers. But if you dig into that Q1 number, there's an interesting split. The big tourist airports, Puerto Vallarta and Los Cabos, they were actually pretty flat, up less than 0.5% each.
Oh, really? So where did the growth come from?
It came mainly from the domestic-focused airports in those developing cities. Los Mochis, for example, was up over 30%, and Guadalajara, the nearshoring hub, up almost 9%. So what this means is, in Q1 25, domestic traffic grew really strongly, up 9.1%, but international traffic actually dipped slightly, down 0.7%.
Huh. So domestic and maybe VFR are becoming more important drivers right now.
It looks that way. It highlights how that diversification helps. The domestic side and maybe VFR are providing a stable growth element, balancing out maybe some softness or cyclicality in international leisure travel.
Okay, so growth is there, profitability is high, but maybe facing some cost pressure. How's the actual financial foundation? Debt, cash?
Financially, they look pretty solid, actually. They're not just growing, they're doing it from a position of strength. Their debt levels seem quite manageable. Debt to equity ratio is around 1.62. Net debt to EBITDA, a key metric, is about 2.6 times. That's comfortably within range for infrastructure assets. And they just proved they have good access to funding. They successfully issued a big bond, $6.0 billion, back in March 2025, and got the highest possible credit ratings for it.
That's a good sign.
Definitely. Plus, they're holding a decent amount of cash. Their current ratio is healthy at 1.68, and they had about $16.2 billion in cash and equivalents at the end of March 2025. So yeah, the balance sheet looks strong, and that's really important given what they plan to spend next.
Right. You mentioned the big investment plan. They've got good cash flow, solid finances.
Yeah.
What exactly are they planning to do with all that capital? Where's the money going?
Well, the big thing is their master development program, the MDP, for 2025 through 2029. This is a huge commitment. We're talking MXP $43.2 billion. That's roughly $2.4 billion U.S. dollars just for their Mexican airports.
Wow, that's a serious amount of investment.
It really is, and they're focusing it strategically. Guadalajara gets the biggest slice, about 44% of the budget. Tijuana gets 18%, Los Cabos 13%. A lot of it, about 37%, is going into expanding terminal buildings. The goal is to add over 50% more floor space across their whole network. So, serious capacity expansion.
And how are they paying for all this?
It's going to be a mix. They plan to use their own internally generated cash flow, which is strong, but they'll also need to take on some new debt. That bond issue was likely part of that plan.
Okay, makes sense. Now, what about shareholders in all this? Are they still getting returns while PEC is spending billions on upgrades?
Yeah, they are. PEC has a pretty consistent history of paying dividends. For 2025, they approved a total dividend of PEN 16.84 per share. They actually just paid the first half of that in May. This was, believe it or not, their 40th dividend payment. Based on recent prices, that translates to a forward dividend yield somewhere between, say, 3.4% and 4.8%, which is pretty attractive income.
That does sound generous, but hang on. Paying out a decent dividend yield while also launching this absolutely massive multi-billion dollar capital investment program, isn't there some tension there? I mean, are they stretching themselves thin?
That's exactly the right question to ask. Yes, there's definitely a potential tension point there in how they allocate capital. Right now, their strong cash flow and their ability to borrow seem to support both the dividends and the CapEx. But, you know, having a high payout ratio, paying out a large chunk of earnings as dividends, while simultaneously committing to huge investments, does require careful management. You've got to watch their leverage, make sure free cash flow holds up. If things don't go exactly to plan, maybe traffic dips or costs run higher, they might have to make a tough choice. Cut back the dividend, or slow down the growth projects. It's definitely a balancing act.
Okay, so a potential point of fragility to watch. Beyond just handling more passengers with bigger terminals, what are the other big strategic moves PEDI is making to drive future growth? How are they trying to boost profitability beyond just traffic numbers?
Right, they have several key growth strategies beyond just pure capacity. That MDP, the big investment plan, that's foundational, obviously. Dealing with congestion, getting ready for more traffic, that's organic growth 101. But critically, they are laser focused on boosting those non-aeronautical revenues. This is really where they see significant margin expansion potential, and it's changing how they operate.
How are they doing that specifically?
One key tactic is shifting to direct operations. Instead of just leasing out space for shops or car parks, PC is increasingly taking direct control of these businesses themselves, running the car parks, the VIP lounges, even convenience stores. In Q1 25, these directly operated businesses already made up 43% of their non-aero revenues. That's way up from 30% just a year earlier.
So they capture the full retail margin, not just rent.
Exactly, higher potential profits. Another really interesting angle is this airport city concept. They're developing real estate adjacent to the airports. The prime example is at Guadalajara. They built this new mixed-use building right there. It's got a Hilton Garden Inn hotel that opened in March 2024, plus offices, commercial space. This creates totally new revenue streams from land that was previously just, well, land near the airport. It turns the airport into more of an economic hub.
That sounds ambitious. Linking back to Guadalajara.
Yes, that heavy investment in Guadalajara, as we mentioned, it's a very strategic bet on nearshoring. It's not just about handling more flights, it's about attracting those higher spending business travelers involved in manufacturing, logistics, tech companies, moving supply chains closer to the U.S. These passengers often use more premium services, spend more in the terminal. It provides a really valuable counterbalance to the ups and downs of leisure tourism.
And are they still adding new flights, new routes?
Oh yeah, definitely. Network expansion is still a priority. Just in Q1 25, their airports added 13 new routes, 10 international, 3 domestic. And for the full year, the plan is for 34 new routes total, 19 international, 15 domestic. So they're still actively working with airlines to boost connectivity and bring in more traffic. Okay, now we've talked a lot about the growth and the strategy, which sounds pretty compelling, but no investment is risk-free. PECO must face some challenges and some potential turbulence ahead, right? What are the main headwinds?
Good point. Let's talk risks.
Absolutely. First off, there are significant regulatory and political risks. Can't ignore those in this business. Those aeronautical revenues, the landing fees and TUAs, they're price capped. The government sets the maximum rates every 5 years, and the next review covers 2025 to 2029. There are some new complexities coming in. Changes to how they calculate the discount rate, for one. And there's this thing called a clawback clause. Basically, if Pekin's passenger traffic ends up being way higher than the government projected, they might have to give back some of those extra profits.
Oh, really? So exceeding expectations could actually cost them?
In a way, yes. It limits the upside from unexpectedly high traffic growth on the regulated side. It's a mechanism we really need to watch closely in the final MDP agreement, as it directly impacts future earnings potential from that regulated stream. And just generally, being a concessionaire means you're exposed to political risk, a change in government, a shift in policy that could potentially lead to renegotiating the concession agreements or facing new taxes or fees.
Okay. Regulatory risk is clear. What else?
Second big category is economic sensitivity and currency exposure. Air travel demand, fundamentally, is cyclical. It follows the economy. So a recession in the U.S., remember, that's their main source of international tourists, or even just a slowdown in Mexico's economy, that would definitely hit traffic numbers and probably spending in the terminals, too.
Makes sense. And the peso.
Yeah, currency fluctuations matter. They report in pesos, but have U.S. dollar exposure. A weaker peso can actually inflate their reported revenues when translated back. But if the peso strengthens significantly and stays strong against the dollar, that could squeeze their margins, especially if costs are peso-based, but some revenues are effectively dollar-linked.
Right, and operational risks. Things going wrong on the ground.
Definitely. That huge CapEx plan, the MXP $43 billion, executing that smoothly is a major challenge. There's always the risk of construction delays, costs running over budget, or disruptions to the existing airport operations while they're building. Any of those could hurt their expected returns. And even with diversification, they're still quite reliant on those key tourist spots, Los Cabos and Puerto Vallarta. So shifts in travel trends, maybe security concerns in those areas, or even natural disasters like hurricanes, those could have an outsized impact. And finally, there's always the risk of, you know, unforeseen shocks. Force majeure events, think pandemics, sadly, or geopolitical conflicts, terrorist attacks, things outside their control that can dramatically impact air travel globally.
Okay, so a fair number of risks to balance against the growth story. We've covered the business, the growth plans, the potential pitfalls. How does the market actually value a company like PAC right now with all these moving pieces? What's the price tag look like?
Right, let's talk valuation. Looking at the standard multiples as of roughly mid-2025, PAC's price-to-earnings ratio, the PE, on a trailing 12-month basis, is somewhere between 24 and 26.6 times earnings. Now, that's higher than its peer, OMA, which is trading closer to 20x. It generally reflects the market giving PAC credit for its larger size, the diversified revenue base, and maybe pricing in some of that future growth we've discussed.
Is that high historically for PAC?
It is above its five-year average, yeah. Which again suggests the market's got expectations baked in. Another key metric for businesses like this is enterprise value to EBITDA. EBITDA. That's sitting in the range of, say, 11x to maybe 14.5x. That seems kind of moderate historically for PAC, maybe slightly higher than its Mexican peers. But it's worth remembering, when you look at global import deals, actual M&A transactions for high-growth airport assets, sometimes those multiples have been much higher, like 18x to 24x EBITDA.
Hmm. Okay. So maybe not totally out of line in a global context, but definitely not cheap compared to its own history or local peers.
That's a fair summary. Comparing market caps, POC is the biggest of the three Mexican players, around $11.6 billion US. Acer is about $9.2 billion, OMA $5.3 billion. And you can argue that PAC's premium valuation is justified by that faster revenue growth, the diversified portfolio, and especially that aggressive push into non-aeronautical revenues. Though some analysts might argue OMA could offer more upside because it's maybe earlier in its own growth story.
What about DCF, discounted cash flow models?
Ugh, DCF. Always tricky, highly sensitive to assumptions. For PAC, the valuation you get from a DCF really hinges on what you plug in for passenger growth long term, how much revenue per passenger grows, especially that non-aero part, the exact cost and timing of that huge MDP investment. The discount rate analysts often use something around 16%, reflecting Mexico risk, and the terminal growth rate assumption, maybe around 8.4%. You look at different analyst models out there and you see a pretty wide range of DCF valuations. It just highlights how much depends on those long-term guesses about growth and risk.
So lots of variables. And the dividend, does that play into valuation?
It does provide some support, yeah. That forward yield of 3.4% to 4.8% is attractive for income investors. But again, you have to constantly ask, is that dividend sustainable given the massive CapEx needs and the current payout ratio? Its reliability is a factor in the valuation support it offers.
Okay, so it really feels like this balance, doesn't it? Attractive growth, strong metrics, strategic pivots, but set against significant regulatory hurdles, macro risks, and that big CapEx execution challenge puts the whole investment debate right there.
Absolutely. It frames the debate perfectly. If you connect it all, the bullish case really hangs on the idea that the market is correctly pricing in the future cash flows from these big expansions and that successful shift to non-aero. You believe the strategy works and pays off long term.
And the counterargument.
The more cautious view, or the bear case, would argue that maybe the current multiples don't fully capture those specific Mexican regulatory risks, especially that clawback clause, or the potential hit from a serious economic downturn in the U.S. or Mexico. It's a classic growth versus risk scenario, a really fascinating balancing act.
So for anyone listening who wants to follow PAC closely, what are the absolute key things, the crucial metrics they should be keeping an eye on going forward?
Okay, yeah. If you want to track PAC progress, there are several vital signs to monitor. First, on the operational side, watch those monthly passenger traffic reports like a hawk. Look at the year-over-year growth, not just the total number, but break it down. How is the consolidated group doing? How are the key airports performing individually? Guadalajara, Tijuana, Los Cabos, Puerto Vallarta, and crucially, what's the mix? Is domestic growth still strong? Is international recovering or lagging? Also critical, revenue per passenger, especially non-aeronautical revenue per passenger. Is that number still climbing? That tells you if their monetization strategy is working, and maybe load factors too, just to get a sense of how full the planes are that are using their airports.
Okay, traffic and revenue per passenger.
Yeah.
What about the financial health side?
On financials and efficiency, track EBITDA growth, absolutely. But pay close attention to the EBITDA margin. Make sure you're looking at the adjusted number, excluding the accounting effects of construction, IFRIC 212. Is that margin holding up, improving, or slipping under cost pressure? Keep tabs on their capital expenditure, the CapEx. Are they spending in line with their MDP budget and what they've guided? Or are costs running higher, projects slower? Ultimately, you want to look at return on invested capital, ROIC. Is PAC generating returns on all this new investment that are higher than their cost of capital? Is that ROIC stable or hopefully rising? That's the real test of value creation. And definitely monitor the leverage ratios. Net debt to EBITDA, you'd want that to stay ideally below 3, maybe 3.5 times for an asset like this. And check their interest coverage ratio to make sure they can comfortably cover their debt payments.
Audit down and any external factors we should watch.
Yes, absolutely. Keep an ear out for any regulatory news from the Mexican government, the SICT. Anything about the final terms of that 2025-2029 MDP framework, or specifically how those tariffs and the clawback will work, that's huge. Monitor the broader economy too, GDP growth, consumer confidence, both in Mexico and the U.S., and keep an eye on that MX and USD exchange rate. And finally, watch for airline news related to PAC airports. Are airlines announcing new routes, increasing capacity? That's usually a good leading indicator for future traffic growth.
Okay, that's a great watch list. So we've done a pretty deep dive here into Grupo Aeroportuario del Pacífico. We've uncovered this really interesting diversified airport network, their dual revenue model with that really strong pivot towards high-margin non-aeronautical stuff. We talked about the huge expansion plans, but also the significant regulatory and economic risks they navigate. It really is a company balancing major growth opportunities with some pretty big challenges. You know, really stands out, I think, about Paytee is this vision they seem to have. It's about transforming airports beyond just places you catch a flight, turning them into these integrated commercial hubs, almost like mini airport cities. This isn't just about managing air traffic anymore. It's about real estate strategy, sophisticated retail operations, and even plugging into global economic shifts like nearshoring. So here's something to think about. How might this evolution of what an airport is start to redefine urban development, maybe even international business connections, in the decades ahead? How could it reshape the links between cities and countries, going way beyond just the runway itself?
How might it change the way we live, work, and connect across borders?